You know, when I first read Joshua 11 and 12, I was picturing like those epic movie battle scenes, you know, swords, dust flying everywhere.
Yeah.
But there's like so much more here
Right.
than just like the battles and the military stuff.
Yeah, it's true. There's a lot more going on beneath the surface, I think.
Yeah.
These chapters, they give us this really cool look into like the ancient world of Canaan, like how they built cities, how they fortified them, how they destroyed them, and how they even like rebuilt them on these layered mounds, these mounds that archaeologists call tells.
Tells. Okay, now that's something I need you to explain. That sounds like straight out of Indiana Jones.
Well, so imagine this. Each layer of a tell, it's like a time capsule from a different period.
Oh, wow.
So digging through one of those is like flipping through like the pages of a history book.
Interesting.
In fact, some tells in Israel, like they contain evidence of multiple conquests and rebuildings
Wow.
spanning thousands of years.
So you're saying we could like potentially find traces of Joshua's conquests buried in these
Oh,
tells.
absolutely. And
Ah.
that's part of what makes the book of Joshua so fascinating. It's not just like a religious text. It's actually intertwined with real historical and archaeological evidence.
That is really incredible. Okay, so let's get back to the northern campaigns.
Okay.
We've got Joshua facing off against King Jabin of Hazor,
Right.
and this massive alliance of Canaanite kings. The text describes their armies as just vast. I mean, like hordes, like sand on the seashore.
Oh, wow.
And they even had chariots, which I think of as like the ancient tanks.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that detail about the chariots, it's super important. Chariots, I mean, they represented really advanced military tech at the time. So for the Israelites to beat an enemy with like that much firepower really shows the power of their faith in God's help.
Right, because just like with the Jordan River, God plays like a super decisive role in giving them those victories. But here's what I find kind of interesting. The actual like battle descriptions, they're really brief. Why do you think that is?
Well, if we like think about the author's purpose here, it seems like they were more focused on what the conquest meant theologically
Okay.
rather than on, the actual battle strategies and things.
Right.
The emphasis, I think, is on God's power and faithfulness and
Yeah.
not on the Israelites, like military schools.
That makes a lot of sense. So it's more about highlighting God's role in like securing the promised land for them
Right. than
giving us like this blow-by-blow
That's what I
account of
say.
every single thing that happened. Now, after defeating Jabin, Joshua burns Hazor to the ground. But we know that not all the conquered cities were destroyed that way. You
Right.
know, Hazor, Jericho, Ai, those seem to be like exceptions. What do you think makes them different?
It's possible that those cities, like, they were considered really key strategic spots, maybe even like centers of idolatry, places that posed a real threat to the Israelites' faith. Burning them, I think, could have been like a symbolic thing, like a way of like cleansing the land and establishing God's authority.
A really powerful statement. Okay, so Joshua keeps going with his campaign, and according to the text, he was completely obedient to God's commands. But then we get this like one little verse that hints at something really interesting. The conquest wasn't this quick and easy victory.
Right.
Like it actually took years.
Exactly. Yeah. That single verse, I think, challenges like a common misunderstanding. It reminds us that the conquest was this long and difficult process, probably marked by like periods of intense fighting and then some relative peace. This wasn't a blitzkrieg. It was a real struggle for control of the land.
So it was more of a long war with different phases and battles, not just like one thing and they won.
Right.
That paints a very different picture. And amidst all this conflict, there's only one group that actually manages to make peace with Israel, the Gibeonites. They tricked Joshua, but he still honored the treaty he made with them.
He
Why
did.
is that exception like so important?
Well, remember Rahab in Jericho?
Yes.
She chose to side with the Israelites, and they spared her life.
Right.
Both Rahab and the Gibeonites, each in their own way, they chose a different path than the other Canaanites.
Yeah.
Their stories, I think, remind us that even within God's big plan, there's still room for people to make their own choices. And there's a possibility of finding favor, even for those who are considered enemies.
That adds like a whole other layer of complexity to the whole story.
It does.
Speaking of complex, we can't ignore that verse about God hardening the hearts of the Canaanites, which led them to fight and ultimately be destroyed. It's a passage that's caused a lot of debate and discussion. How do we like make sense of that?
It's definitely a challenging verse to wrap your head around.
Yep.
It's kind of like the same thing we see with Pharaoh in Exodus.
Right.
This hardening of hearts. Yeah. You know, it raises all these complicated questions about God's power and free will.
Yeah.
But even while the text describes this divine action, it also shows us examples of those who chose differently.
Right.
Like Rahab.
Yeah.
And the Gibeonites.
So even in the story of divine judgment and predestined conquest, the text is still leaving room for individual choices.
I think so, yeah.
And different paths.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to like really think about as we keep going.
For sure. And it sets up that final battle with the Anakim.
Oh, yeah.
Those like legendary giants
uh-huh.
who had scared the Israelites for generations.
Right.
Defeating them, as described in these chapters, it really marks a turning point in the story.
Because their defeat means the major fighting is over.
Right.
Which leads to that powerful phrase, the land had rest. What's the significance of that phrase? Is it just about like a break from fighting, or is there something like deeper going on?
It's such a loaded phrase. Mm-hmm. It's so rich with meaning.
Yeah.
It goes all the way back to the promise of rest in Deuteronomy.
Mm-hmm.
And even foreshadows what we see about Sabbath rest in Hebrews.
Okay.
It suggests like not just a physical rest, but a deeper, more spiritual rest
mm-hmm.
that comes from like lining up with God's will and finding peace in his presence.
And that's something, you know, I think a lot of us connect with even today.
Oh, yeah.
In our world that's always so busy and chaotic, that idea of true rest, finding peace in the middle of chaos, that's super appealing.
Totally. And it's a theme that we're going to keep exploring as we go deeper into Joshua. But before we move on, let's look a little closer at chapter 12.
Okay.
The chapter that, you know, at first might seem like just a boring list of names and places.
You're talking about that super detailed record of all the conquered kings and territories.
Yeah.
It's like an ancient spreadsheet.
It is, yeah.
Why is this list so important?
Well, for the people who first heard it, this list would have been really powerful.
Yeah.
Proof that God kept his promises.
Mm-hmm.
It was like this solid record of their inheritance.
Right.
A reminder of everything God had done for them. And it's a reminder for us, too.
Yeah.
God keeps his promises.
It's like God saying, hey, I did what I said I would do.
Exactly.
I gave you this land. Now it's up to you to live here faithfully and honor the covenant.
Precisely. And that's a perfect way to lead into the next part of our deep dive.
Okay.
Because chapter 12 really sets the stage for how the land is going to be divided among the tribes.
Right.
A process overseen by, you know, Joshua and Eleazar the priest.
So stay with us as we explore how the Israelites, led by Joshua, go from conquering to actually settling the land.
Yeah.
We'll uncover how they split up the land, establish communities, and face the challenges of living in this new and diverse place.
Absolutely.
So we just left off talking about how chapter 12 is like setting the stage for the Israelites to actually settle in the land. I mean, it's one thing to conquer, but it's a whole other thing to like actually build a society.
You're totally right. It's like the difference between winning a race and figuring out how to live in the stadium.
Right.
This land, Canaan, it wasn't just strategically important. It was also, like, incredibly diverse.
Diverse in what way? I mean, besides the milk and honey, what else did it have going on?
Well, I mean, think about it. Mountains, valleys,
yeah.
Deserts, coastal plains. It had everything.
Wow.
And all that variety in the landscape, it, like, created all these different cultures and ways of life for the people who lived there. You had farmers, shepherds, people trading on the sea, all within this relatively small area.
So conquering the land was just the first step.
Right.
Now Joshua has to figure out how to lead all these different people and help them create like a unified society in a place that's already full of diverse cultures and beliefs.
Yeah.
Talk about a leadership challenge.
It's a challenge that I think we still see today.
Yeah.
You know? Like all over the world, societies struggle with this issue of diversity and integration.
Yeah.
How do you create a sense of unity while also respecting and preserving different cultural identities?
It's like the age-old question, isn't it? Unity and diversity, finding that balance.
Right.
And it makes you wonder, how did the Israelites actually handle those differences?
Yeah.
Did they just absorb the Canaanite culture that was already there?
Right.
Or did they try to hold on to their own separate identity?
Well, I think the archaeological record and what we read in later books of the Bible gives us some clues.
Okay.
There's evidence of both, actually.
Oh, really?
Like, they took on some Canaanite farming practices.
Mm-hmm.
They even used some of their religious symbols. But they also really fiercely protected certain parts of their own identity.
Like what?
Especially their belief in one God.
It's like this giant social experiment.
It is.
Playing out over generations. You know, when you look at those massive battles in these chapters, mm-hmm. it's easy to just focus on the military stuff.
The strategies.
The scale of the fighting.
Right.
But it's important to remember that behind all of that, there were real people.
Oh, yeah.
Families, whole communities,
mm-hmm.
trying to figure out how to deal with this massive change in their lives.
Exactly. And I think that human element is often lost in these big historical narratives.
Yeah.
Imagine all the stories, the anxieties, the hopes, the dreams
right.
of the people caught up in this conquest. There have been some who resisted, some who cooperated, and others just trying to survive.
And speaking of navigating complex situations, let's talk about Joshua.
Okay.
What kind of leader does he seem to be in these chapters?
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to fill some pretty big shoes following Moses.
He does. Well, we definitely see him as a decisive military leader.
Mm-hmm.
Skilled at strategy,
uh-huh.
able to inspire his troops. But he's also shown as being really devoted to God.
Yeah.
Like really carefully carrying out God's commands.
Right.
Even when those commands are, you know, hard for us to understand today.
You're talking about those commands to destroy certain cities.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah, it's hard to reconcile that with our modern ideas about morality and war.
It is. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's important to remember that we're looking at this through a very different cultural and historical lens.
Mm-hmm.
The ancient world, they had a different way of understanding things like war, justice, and divine judgment.
So while we might struggle with those parts of the text, we should try to understand them in their historical context.
Right.
Recognizing that our modern ideas might not always line up with the values and norms of that time.
Exactly.
But even with those difficult parts, Joshua's obedience to God's commands is always emphasized.
It is. And it's not just blind obedience either.
What do you mean?
Well, remember, Joshua had walked with Moses.
Yeah.
He saw God's miracles firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
And he even questioned God's plans sometimes.
Right.
His obedience came from deep faith and trust, built through years of experience and a real relationship with God.
So it wasn't just following orders.
Right.
It was about aligning his will with God's will.
Exactly.
Even when it was hard or didn't make sense from a human point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of faith is something we can all learn from, even today.
Oh, absolutely.
Think about the challenges you face in your own life.
Yeah.
Do you trust God enough to follow his guidance,
mm-hmm.
even when it seems counterintuitive or mm-hmm. difficult?
Joshua's story challenges us to think about our own faith.
Yeah.
And what it really means to obey God.
It's a powerful message. And it makes you wonder how Joshua stacks up as a leader compared to Moses.
Yeah.
I mean, they both faced huge challenges
mm-hmm.
and led the Israelites through pivotal moments in their history.
Right.
So how do they compare?
It's a comparison that I think the writers of the Bible want us to make.
Really?
Throughout Joshua, you see these echoes of Moses' leadership.
Okay.
Like parting the Jordan River,
mm-hmm.
just like Moses parted the Red Sea.
Right.
Receiving the law on Mount Ebal, just like Moses on Mount Sinai.
Those parallels are pretty striking. So is the author saying that Joshua is just copying Moses?
Hmm.
Or is he forging his own path as a leader?
I think it's a bit of both, honestly.
Okay.
He's definitely stepping into those big shoes, carrying on Moses' legacy.
Yeah.
But he's also dealing with the unique challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Leading the Israelites into a new era, the era of settling down and building a nation.
And that era is going to come with its own set of complexities and challenges, right?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, conquering is one thing, but governing.
Right.
Setting up laws.
Resolving disputes.
Creating a sense of shared identity among a diverse group.
Exactly. And those challenges are exactly what we're going to explore as we continue our deep dive into Joshua.
Okay.
The battles might be over, but the real work of building a nation is just getting started.
And that work brings up some big questions.
It does.
Questions that are still relevant today. How do you create a fair and just society?
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance individual freedom with responsibility to the community?
Yeah.
How do you create a nation that reflects God's values?
Those are questions for the ages.
They really are.
And Joshua gives us some fascinating insights, even if they come wrapped up in ancient stories and cultural contexts that we might not fully understand.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Right.
We've still got more to cover in our deep dive. Let's just take a moment to appreciate what we've learned so far.
Yeah.
The epic battles, the complex leadership of Joshua, the challenges of cultural diversity,
right,
and that big question of what it means to be faithful and obedient to God. It's been quite a journey through the book of Joshua.
It really has.
You know, from those epic battles and conquests to the deeper questions about leadership and faith and building a society that reflects God's will.
It's been fascinating. And as we wrap up our deep dive into chapters 11 and 12, I think it's worth pointing out how these chapters, even though they're full of conquest and warfare, they actually set the stage for some really profound theological themes.
Okay.
Themes that echo throughout the rest of the Bible.
I'm intrigued. What kind of theological themes are we talking about here?
Well, one of the biggest ones, like woven throughout these chapters, is the idea of obedience.
Okay.
We see Joshua super carefully following God's commands.
Mm-hmm.
Even when those commands seem difficult or even like morally questionable from our modern perspective.
You're talking about that command to destroy certain cities, right? That's a tough one.
It is. But the text really emphasizes that Joshua left nothing undone, that the Lord had commanded Moses, that unwavering obedience. It might be hard for us to fully understand today.
Yeah.
But it's presented as like the key to the Israelites' success and the fulfillment of God's promises. It reminds us that their relationship with God was based on this covenant.
Right.
A binding agreement.
Yeah.
That required both sides to keep their end of the bargain.
So obedience wasn't just blindly following.
No.
It was about actively showing their commitment to the covenant and their trust in God's plan.
Exactly. And that's where faith and obedience get all tangled up together.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't have true obedience without faith.
Right.
You got to really believe that what you're being asked to do is for your own good, even if it doesn't make sense right now.
It's like taking that leap of faith, trusting that God will catch you.
Yeah.
Even when you can't see the net.
Right.
And we see Joshua taking those leaps all through these chapters.
Yeah.
Leading them across the Jordan, conquering those cities that seemed impossible to conquer.
Mm-hmm.
Even commanding the sun to stand still. I mean, those were some seriously bold moves of faith.
Absolutely. And those acts of faith were always rewarded.
Yeah.
Victory and success. It's this powerful reminder that God honors those who trust him and follow his guidance.
Mm.
Even when the way forward seems uncertain or even dangerous.
And it speaks to that theme of God, it's faithfulness too, right?
Yeah.
Because we see God constantly coming through for Joshua and the Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps his promises.
He does.
And he gives them the power to overcome things that just seemed impossible. It's like this reassurance, you know, that God is always there working in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Even when we don't get it.
Even when we can't see it.
It's a comforting thought, isn't it? Especially when we think about our own lives.
Yeah.
You know, and the challenges we face every day. We might not be out there fighting Canaanite armies, but we all have battles we're fighting.
We do.
Obstacles to overcome,
mm-hmm.
decisions to make that take faith and courage.
That's right. And in those times, it's good to remember that the same God who helped Joshua lead his people into the promised land, he's still with us today.
He is.
Offering guidance, strength, and ultimately victory to those who trust in him.
It's a timeless message woven into these ancient stories.
It is.
And it goes beyond cultures and historical boundaries, speaking to like the deepest parts of us, our longing for purpose, for belonging, for a place of rest and security.
That's right. That idea of rest that we talked about before.
Right.
It's not just physical, is it? It's about finding that deeper spiritual rest that comes from aligning ourselves with God's will.
Yeah.
And trusting his promises.
It's about letting go of our anxieties, our fears, our doubts, and giving them to a power that's bigger than us.
Letting God lead us to that place of true peace.
And fulfillment.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I'm just left with this feeling of awe and wonder. Awe at the scale of God's plan, the courage of Joshua, and the resilience of the Israelites. And wonder at how these ancient stories can still speak to us today. offering guidance and challenges and ultimately hope for our own journeys.
That's the beauty of the Bible. It's alive, you know, full of truths and stories that resonate across cultures and generations. It invites us to engage, to ask questions, to wrestle with its complexities, and to discover how relevant it is to our own lives.
It has been incredible exploring these chapters with you, but the conversation doesn't have to end here. We would love for you to continue the deep dive on your own. What really stood out to you in these chapters? What questions came up for you? What insights did you gain? How do these stories connect with what you're going through right now?
The book of Joshua is like a tapestry woven with threads of history, faith, and our search for meaning and purpose. It's a book that deserves our attention, our reflection, and our open hearts.
So keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep digging deeper into the amazing world of the Bible. Until next time, happy deep diving.